prostitutes that he was pulling up into his apartment occasionally.
That was awesome.
And so his wife had to be like, no, they're auditioning for a movie for Rodney, and they're not real prostitutes. And he goes, to this day, you know, I still get bad looks. Of course, he's passed away. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kind of Funny Morning Show for Tuesday, March 20th. We are knee-deep in GDC week, and thankfully for that, we've been able to pull our very, very special guest today. A dear friend of mine, creator of Oddworld, and creator of many weird conversations I've had while drunk at E3, Mr. Lauren Lanning is here.
Yay! Great to be here.
Thanks for coming back, man. I appreciate it. Every time you come back, I think maybe he really does like us. Maybe we're actually cool people, and we appreciate that. We were just talking about Rodney Dangerfield. I just recently read his biography, which is my touchstone for Rodney. Lauren actually just lived next door to the guy.
Across the street. And it was easy to see because he used to have one of those cut-up life-size dolls that went in the window.
He's one of those trippy guys that you think of. You're like, oh, he's ubiquitous, right? He is comedy. He is a guy that has been around forever, but he wasn't. He actually didn't start comedy until 40. Well, he started earlier and then came back to it at 40. He used to sell aluminum siding for a very long time.
I bet he was great at it.
He was very good at it. He talked a lot about he and his friends would like, they loved it because you didn't have to get up early in the morning to do it, which is it's the most comic fucking thing you've ever heard in your life. If you know anything about stand-up comics, they do not like getting up in the morning. In fact, I'm like an early bird. I'm always late here. Greg, I'll tell you.
But stop doing that. When I walk in the room, you just make eye contact and start talking to me.
It's the beard. That's the problem.
It sucks you in, right?
What do you think about this?
It's like the visual black hole.
Give me a read on this.
I think it needs to be about this long.
That's what I'm talking about.
You were the one telling me that I was getting...
I want you to shape it this way so it comes to like a pharaoh's like... points, you know?
Ooh. Sure. Okay.
You look cool on stage.
Yeah. I played Lauren's new game. It's really good.
I'm not sure.
I didn't play it, I guess. I just watched it, but I was watching a lot of gameplay, but it's really good.
Yeah, here's the deal. Cool Ray, the shot
you
looks...
Now be careful. You don't understand embargoes.
This is what I'm going to say. This shot looks a touch bright, but you let me know what it looks like. I won't say anything about it, because I am always the person... I do that thing where you say, don't talk about monkeys. And I'll go, okay.
And then you talk
What do you think about monkeys? Like, that's the first thing I'll do. So I stay it away. I'm not saying anything about it. Greg, what are you allowed to say about the game? Aces.
There we go. Okay.
For audio listeners, Greg gave a thumbs up.
Thank you.
He gave a big smile. The beard moved. You know it's a big smile. And that's where we're at. Ladies and gentlemen, today's episode of the Kind of Funny Morning Show, of course, is brought to you by our store, where you can get the shirt that I'm wearing right now, the KF Game shirt. It looks fantastic. We've got a couple other shirts over there. Go check it out. Of course, we're also doing the MCU in Review, which I'm sure is a series that you have zero interest in, as it is the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Review. We are going back and rewatching every single one of those movies. And reviewing them. Okay. Do you want in on this?
Do you want
to watch 19 movies with us about guys
imagine.
In tights?
I can't imagine. It would be terrible. You know? It's like I never got. I mean, I'm a huge, like, I adore Stan Lee. Mm-hmm. I adore a lot of the creations. I'm envious of what Marvel pulled off. But the idea that someone's going to show up and kick your ass with tights on,
yeah.
It just never resonated right for me.
It's interesting.
I lived in New York. I worked in the Bronx. I worked in Brooklyn. You know, been in a lot of places.
You never saw a bunch of guys getting fights
was
in tights?
Was in the L.A. riots, yeah. You know, like, yeah, but the guys, no one ever showed up in tights who was like, all right, I'm kicking everyone's ass. I just imagine like a massive outpouring of comedic laughter.
It is one of those things where you start to think to yourself, like from a logical standpoint, like obviously the movies, I love all these movies, so we're diametrically opposed on that. But one of the things that you think about is that you start looking at some of these costumes, specifically like Batman's costume.
Yeah.
Right? And I looked at it. I just recently went back and watched Justice League with my wife. She
I thought
seen
you were
going
to say you bought a costume. Batman.
No, I'm not quite at that point yet.
Are you sure?
No in my
price?
Life. I mean, I would. Actually, that's not true at all. I do own a Batman costume.
Oh my God!
Damn it. Well, it was for Halloween. Okay. I went as Batman. My friend went as Robin, and he was like 5 times taller than me, so it was hilarious. But you look at these costumes, and there's a shot in Justice League where he looks over and the costume's there, but it's standing on its own 2 feet because it's so stiff, and you're like, how would anyone be able to move in this thing?
Yeah.
You can't fight in this thing.
Yeah. In Iron Man's,
you can't wrestle
really
in this thing.
Right?
Well, Iron Man is hilarious, but that one is a little more believable to me because at least it's a mechanical suit.
Right.
But what are you going to do? Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see our opinions on Age of Ultron and where that ranks in our grand MCU ranking, go over to kindoffunny.com right now. Check that out. If you're listening on podcast services, of course, we also have that available to you. So if you're at the gym right now and you think to yourself, I'd rather not listen to, you know, Bobby Tarantino 2 or any new cool albums. I want to listen to Nick wax poetic about where Age of Ultron should fit. There you go. It's there for you. Of course, we have lots of really fun special guests this week on all of our shows. If you go over here, yeah, you can see. Today we got Danny O'Dwyer coming back from No Clip. He's coming back from wherever the hell he was. He was on the East Coast, maybe he was in Ireland. Who the hell knows? He's coming back to do Kind of Funny Games Daily today. I'm assuming you got lots of fun stuff to do this week as well. Is it going to be
thrilling?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. At least it's not E3.
That's not like, saying much.
Like I walk out and then I pass out.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. What is GDC like for you? Is it just a nonstop, like, let's get out there? Let's network. Let's talk to people. Business meeting. Well, yeah, greasing palms at cool restaurants when you walk in and Shuhei Yoshida's there and you're like, we got to grease the palms. We get a good table.
Yeah, you pay off. You know.
Yeah, just everyone's getting paid. No,
but it's like E3 is the. I mean, GDC is the conference where everyone doesn't show up to a meeting. And they go, hey, it was GDC, man. Right. Which is like everyone shows up to party and then they try to book meetings and no one shows up.
That's
like huge, right?
That's beautiful.
Whereas like E3, you don't show up. That's like really
that's an
offensive.
Insult.
But everyone's like, hey, man, we were smoking dope in the room. You're like, you get it. We were too high to go to the meeting.
I'll tell you what they read out. The term smoking dope sounds so much more serious than it is.
I know.
It's all legal, by the way.
Yeah.
We want you to know it's legal in California.
Very
legal in California, much to the happiness of all the comics that I hang out with on a nightly basis. let's see what else we got here for housekeeping. Last little thing, the Kind of Funny World Championship Party Mode will be going live tomorrow. This is one of the best ones we've ever done. It's over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We did a bracketed tournament to see. You saw the belts earlier today.
Yeah, it looked good.
It's a great looking belt.
It looked great.
I'll tell you one thing right now. I've had that belt. I've been the champ. It feels even better when you're wearing it.
Does it really?
And if I get it again this Wednesday, I will be wearing it on this show for the rest of my life until someone dethrones me.
Oof.
Yeah. So I'm just putting that out there.
Who made that for you?
You know, I don't know. Tim reached out to a couple people and we ordered it. It was special order. It was actually a really expensive belt.
Yeah,
but we did it. We had it made specifically for Kind of Funny Live 3 because we did a big tournament there as well. Mm-hmm. It's a legit belt though.
Like we've had
Xavier Woods from WWE comes and he's like, no, this is a good belt. It's hefty. It's got a weight to it. Because you know, most of the time you put them on, it feels like a toy.
Yeah.
You want it to feel like you earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You don't want to put the bargain Batman.
And you can carry it around on the show.
Yeah,
the
that's what I do. If you look at my PSN icon right now, I have it slung on my shoulder.
Like Hip Hop Gamer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly. That's what I like to do. All right. Quick reminder, if you want to ask Lauren anything or if you want to give us a tip, you guys can tip. We'll read tips at the $5 or above level or as well as 500 bits. So you can get a question there, guaranteed an answer, or at least we'll read it. If it's a weird question, I will veto it. Of course, if you guys are subscribers, you get a little extra time with us at the end of the show to ask us some questions as well. So make sure to use your Amazon Prime account to link to your Twitch Prime account. Give it to someone. I gave mine to Jay Jamrod last night. But Teddy, you might be next. Just let you know that. All right. I'm dying to hear your opinion on Justice League, so let's just jump right into this first news story. This comes from IO9. You'll appreciate this.
I love the headline.
Yeah, Justice League is officially the lowest grossing DC universe movie. Last week, story reads, Justice League quietly ended its domestic box office run. This is domestic, by the way. This is just United States. With a total gross of a little over $229 million, making it the lowest grossing film in the new DC universe. It's a hugely surprising fact considering Zack Snyder's directed film featuring Batman, Superman, yada, yada, yada. It was supposed to be The Avengers, a film that blew away the others by bringing together all of its heroes. Plus, the release came mere months after the huge success of Wonder Woman. So most thought that goodwill would carry over. It did not. The $229 million plus gross Justice League, puts Justice League over $60 million behind Man of Steel, which is in fourth place, almost $100 million behind Suicide Squad, which is in third place, a little over $100 million behind Batman v Superman, second place, and $183 million behind DC's number one film, Wonder Woman. Internationally, it's more of the same. While the film is likely still playing in a few places across the globe, its international total domestic currently sits at $657 million, which again puts it fifth out of the five DC movies, with about $10 million behind It and Man of Steel.
What was the budget?
The budget, let's look that up. Let's see, box office.
Isn't it amazing? It only grossed $250 million, what, over the weekend?
No, Justice League has been out for a very, very long time. In fact, you can get it on demand, you can rent it right now. It just finished, when they say it finished its domestic run, there was probably one or two theaters across that were showing it, major chains that were still showing it, was still there, like a 12 o'clock showing. Mm-hmm. So officially wrapping it, they have the box office numbers. I'm sure it's made a ton of money and rental, and because it's been on demand for you know, on VOD services for a while. But the problem is these movies have to gross, they have to get close to $1 billion or else they're considered failures, right?
Failure is such a loose term. You know what I mean? We're talking about the DCEU. Think about it like this. How many pieces of fine art, Lauren Lanning, are hanging in the Louvre right now?
The Louvre?
That when they got made, everybody's like, that wasn't good. That's the lowest Da Vinci painting anyone's ever seen. That's the lowest grossing Da Vinci painting anybody's ever seen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Time will tell on this one.
So Justice League might wind up in the Louvre.
They call it a slow burn. You know
slow
what I mean?
Slow burn, I hear you.
A slow burn, Nick.
How much?
Nick, you're old. Correct me if I'm wrong. When E.T. came out, bombed. Later on, though.
Is that true?
No.
No.
Not in close.
Not even close. Not even close. It was one of the biggest hits.
Yeah. E.T. is one of those movies my wife can't watch because she remembers crying so hard at it in theaters when we were kids. Because we're children of the 80s.
When they were freeing the frogs?
No, she starts crying when she sees
the heart
his body. And it's like all the colors gone out of it. Yeah, it's really sad.
That was actually very sad.
I can't watch the movie either. Hold on. I really want to know this. Now I want to know how much Justice League cost to make. Where the fuck?
I'll give you my 2 cents on these things.
Yeah, whatever. So it's not considered a success with DC standards, unfortunately.
And so here's the model, right? The model is, okay, a film studio, a label like that needs X number of hits next year. And in 2 years from now to fill the roster. So it's not like they have a great story that needs to become a movie. Mm-hmm. What they have is a big brand that they need an adequate script for in time to get it out for next year. And that's like kind of occasionally they get it right. You know, I'd like to know more of the story of Black Panther and sort of development.
Black Panther, great. That's a movie that I think, well, the thing with Marvel is they have a lineage, they have a system that they can plug in new directors with different ideas.
Right.
And they have this, what I think is a very effective system where they're like, look, we're looking for your perspective on this. We want to have you make this film, but we're going to plug you into this system where we have producers, we have people who can help you along the ride and help you craft that so that it's still our quote-unquote standards.
And it works a lot for them,
Well,
right?
Black Panther, it definitely worked because they brought in Ryan Coogler for it, who's the guy that did Creed. Yeah. He also did Fruitvale Station. I don't know if you saw that or not. Yeah. It was about the BART shooting a few years ago.
I didn't see it, but I heard
really
it.
Really good movie, really good indie. Yeah. Starring Michael B. Jordan, worked with Michael B. Jordan on that, brought him back to Creed. They developed that relationship over two films and said, hey, I'm getting the opportunity after Creed to do Black Panther. I want you to be the villain in it. B. Jordan's awesome as well. But the main thing for Coogler was he was like, this is going to be the first time that you see an all-black cast painted in a light where they're all, like, the heroes are black, not just the side character, not just
the first guy to get shot in the West.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not just these people. And it's really, really cool, but the movie still feels like a Marvel movie. It still tells a cool story. It still has an antagonist that is compelling, a protagonist that is relatively compelling. I would actually argue that the Michael B. Jordan, the antagonist character, is way better. But most good films have a strong antagonist. Yeah. It's really, really cool. Justice League, by the way, has a production budget of roughly $300 million, so you can imagine they're not too happy about
Sting.
Yeah, because you have to also, they always say production budget of $300 million, but they don't talk about how much it costs to market the film.
Yeah, and I think no matter what, you know, this is the sequelitis of things, right? No matter what, when you have to have a great script by Tuesday, right? Okay, now let's throw some writers at it. It's hard without being formulaic, right? And eventually that wears really thin. And we see it on various franchises that just peter over time because they're like, oh, we're betting on a franchise for, you know, next year. We need the script now. And I've seen that happen so many
times. You're a
man
that works with production timelines that are long.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. It's good. But so my question to you is like, how much added pressure would it be if you knew you had to make a sequel right now while you're still making
the
first?
Well, this is how we, in my opinion, and this is no blame, this is just the history, right?
Sure.
That's what happened to us on the Oddworld Quintology, meaning we released Abe's Odyssey, it was the story I wanted to tell. I was learning how to build games, quite frankly. And then the second part was this whole big story. But what happened was the publisher said, Doom 2 slipped. Unreal slipped. Everyone slipped at Christmas for GT Interactive at the time, except us, and then we were a hit. So then we're like, we need a new one.
Yeah.
Just use the same engine. And I planned on rebuilding a new engine, and I planned on a lot of stuff. And we need it in 9 months. And it was like, ah!
It's not really an engine. It's really a demo that sucks, man. Like, it was terrible technology. It was like, oh, why are you doing this? And I had to change everything about what the original idea was just to produce something in 9 months. And what I've heard people say is twice the gameplay, half the inspiration, you know, half the soul. And I think that was very accurate, right? So that's just a personal experience.
That's a great saying.
How you get off track. And then after that, we were doing Munch's Odyssey. And we were aligned, very fortunately, with the Xbox launch, right? And we were just trying to survive. But what happened then is Microsoft going, we think you're the Mario killer for us. So that tended to shape a little bit of, and you're trying to be a good partner, you know?
Yeah.
And who am I to argue? They had all the markets.
When someone says you're the Mario killer, that puts a little bit of an expectation on you, that might be pressure.
Well, like a little bit. I'm like, yeah, we're really going to dethrone Miyamoto, you know? Right. But that was like, you know, when they look at demographic and we plan to do this and that. So that tends to, the business and the timing and the pressures can shape the content. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to us. And that's in the new one that we're doing. I was like, you know what? Let's get back to that original idea because I love the universe. I love the possibility of what we said with a 5-part series. And I said, well, let's get back to what the original intention was. So people think we're remaking what was Abe's Exodus, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be here pimping that. But
no, it's just fascinating.
But what we do is I said, okay, let's get to the original soul of what that game was supposed to be. And the game we released was nothing like it, but it went through this journey, you know, involving trains, involving different factories, involving brew. Let's get back to the original of it. And then we just completely rescoped it. We completely started from ground zero. But one of the reasons I was able to kind of get away with this insanity is no one else is paying for it except our dumbasses, you know?
Yeah, that's...
And we're really going for broke on this, you know, and I get no sleep throughout the year, and that's typical. But the reason was, it's like, let's get back to the heart of what it meant, you know? And we were able to kind of build Abe's Odyssey that way, and it took us over 2.5 years to build the company, build the team, and release the product. And then we're in similar sort of scopes now, but we have slightly different models about how we produce it. And we're trying to do a lot more with a lot less. But we're able to stay true to a vision because we don't have someone saying, look, we need that for this Q4 or else we're all screwed together.
Right.
And so we're able to have more of that creative intention that we always wanted. And that's the problem when you get into systems. And I'm not, you know, it's just business, right? Like here we have $250 million economic failure, right? So it's like, I decided, instead of trying to build $40 million games, maybe we can build $5 to $10 million games. Mm-hmm. And then if we can do that self-publishing and return 2X, we get to build another game and have some fun along the way,
get a little employed,
you know, keep it simple, right? But we're not with a public company that needs to have a 5X return or you're a loser. And we're not with a VC that has to have a 10X return or you're a loser.
Right.
Right? And so it's a different ratio of...
That's insane. It's interesting to hear those thoughts because that's actually echoed in the film industry as well.
Absolutely.
A lot of those movies that were the $10 to $50 million range are just gone. They're gone. Those are the risk movies.
And a great example of that was like Scorsese, who I think really understood his audience and the scale of it. So they were always trying to give Martin Scorsese more money to make his movies. It's like, it's Martin Scorsese. Let's have it be the blockbuster. He's like, my audience is not the blockbuster, okay?
Yeah.
So you want me to spend...
I'm not directed at Justice League anytime soon.
Yeah, you want me to spend $150 million. I don't want to spend any more than $40 million because I know who my audience is. My number's a little off. But that was his mentality. And that was really smart, right? As opposed to Michael Bay, who's like, I'm all about the teenage date night, and I'm all about the boys, and I know my audience is high school teeny bopper boys, and so kill me. That's a quote from him, right? So kill me, right? But he knows it, and he knows that that's the biggest box office spend. That's the biggest people buying tickets is, you know, younger males. And date night is really... rocking the box office. And so he can spend as much as he wants and he'll probably make it back. Like, they still make money, his movies.
Surprisingly, they still make money. You talk about half the, what was it? Twice the story, half the inspiration.
Half the soul.
half the soul. If you've seen a Transformers movie anytime soon,
it's hard, man.
500 times the graphics, 500 times less the soul.
That's how it goes. Just like another chase.
But it's fascinating to me. Those are actually starting to have negative returns now, too. They're thinking about revamping that series as well because I think they finally hit that tipping point where, I mean, and you know, that's... As a business person, as someone who runs a business, you do have to do that. Look, we have a product that's killing. Yeah. Let's make more of that product. Yeah. That makes sense because if you make more of that product, I don't have to tell people they don't have jobs.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
And then you go, you ride it, and you ride it to a point where it's like, okay, you're getting the diminishing returns. Now we got to shift and we got to find something new. So I totally understand that. But a perfect example, time and time again, that I keep seeing is Guillermo del Toro. He comes back. And they say, I think he wanted $40 million for Shape of Water. And the company that funded it, the people that funded it, said, we can only give you $20 million. And he went to his friends, who admittedly are amazing directors in their own right, Alfonso Cuarón and a few other guys, and said, what should I do here? And he said, well, you remember when we were young and hungry and we just wanted to tell a story no matter how, we just, any way, shape, or form, we just get out there and do it, we'd figure it out. Why don't we go back to that mentality? Because it's safer and there's less risk and we can tell the story we want to tell. And so they have the budget for Shape of Water. And I think 2 years later, he's standing on stage accepting the Academy Award.
Which I don't necessarily think that was the best picture. I think that's trends influencing that.
I have not seen it yet.
But it was totally admirable.
What was did you see all the films from last year?
No, not all of them, but I did see Shape of Water, you know.
And what did you think was better than Shape of Water? I'm sure it was a good film, by the way. I'm not saying that it was, you're trashing it or anything like that.
Oh, man.
Because I saw...
I'm in the middle of Dev, right?
So no, totally. I won't put you on that.
But you know, there was some weakness in the writing, I thought. There was some weaknesses in the character development. But it was a wonderful little tale, right? And what you said, I think, is true, which is, how do you figure out how to do it, man? I recently had... a conversation with a DreamWorks Pixar class director, really great guy, and he's wanting to make his own movie and stuff, and he's really passionate about it. And I said, look, man, you figure out how to make the movie for $5 million, for $10 million. If you're going to do it in CG, you can use game engines today. You can do this stuff. He's like, $5 million, I can't even do the testing, the audience testing. And I was like, dude.
You don't need audience.
You don't need audience testing. You need audience testing when DreamWorks is spending or Pixar is spending, you know, $150, $200 million and every joke needs to be on because that needs to be a $1 billion blockbuster, right? Why don't you just make the film you want for $5 million and if it returns $20 million, you're a hit.
You're good.
Right? You don't need a $500 million to be okay.
There's a magic to that problem solving, by the way. There's a magic to the directors who have to come in and figure out how to do underwater sequences for cheap. Like, you know, Guillermo del Toro famously was like, on this one, was like, we couldn't shoot underwater. It was way too expensive. What did they do? They filled a room full of smoke, put some particulates in afterward, and hung them.
We were doing that years ago in visual effects.
And the effect lends itself, and you figure out how to have that effect lend itself to the storytelling and not be counterintuitive with the storytelling. And famously as well, the Wachowski siblings, when they were making The Matrix, they didn't have a lot of money for that movie. They had to figure out how to make it cool.
And that was the best one, right?
That one, of course, because it was the best one.
Because the expectations were low, they were able to focus more on the craft, right? Yes. Not the delivery date and not how to...
And tell
the
next a great
ones,
story.
The next ones, they said, okay, you've got this much budget now. And all of a sudden, you have that many more marketing people involved, that many more salespeople involved, that many more studio notes
You get
involved.
The weird albino twins with the reggae cuts.
Where did that come from?
Who the hell knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was weird.
But that idea of, like, figure out how to do it cheaper, you know, and it may take you a little longer, you're not under the same pressures, but you can tell a better story. And the best picture is almost always that. Mm-hmm. Like the big best picture in the Academy Awards is rarely the summer blockbuster.
Never been the summer blockbuster.
Because it's like someone has a great script. They're like, I need to make this script. And then all those studios are looking and going, it's not big enough. It's a niche.
It brings up the question, are the Academy Awards too jilted toward that, right? Are they discriminatory against comic book movies? Because Logan came out last year, and a lot of people
Logan was great.
A lot of people thought, hey, if this were 10 years from now and Logan comes out, this might actually get a nod from the Academy. Mm-hmm. It got nominated for, I think,
Best. I thought it was better than Shape of Water.
I thought it was really good, but it still has that sort of stigma about it, that it's a kid's movie, it's not a real movie, even though it tells the story in a lot of ways that's very, very meaningful, especially for people like me who have been following Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart in these roles since the late 90s.
Yeah.
And you see the culmination of these two careers and these two characters that basically have been very, very helpful in shepherding comic book movies into the mainstream, and you see their last two movies together. It's very heartfelt.
It is great when you bring that new twist in a different way than they're expecting. It's like what Frank Miller did with Dark Knight, right? It's like now you got the aging Batman, And Logan was like, I loved Logan.
It was great.
I thought it was great.
It was great.
I thought it was rich. I liked seeing superheroes that aren't so super, that are down, you know?
I know.
And then they got to find it.
Why it's so fun. I think James Mangold did a great job with that. He's the director. In that he was like, look, these movies can't be about superpowers because after a certain point, it's boring. Because you have to constantly find people who have matching powers for it to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that all the time echoed everywhere, right? Two teams go against each other. It's like, well, the two guys that shouldn't be fighting have to fight because it's fascinating. If this guy fights, this guy's just going to clobber him, right?
And I'm so bored of watching a fight. I'm so bored. If I watch another fist fight that lasts 5 minutes, if I watch another car chase that lasts 15 minutes that's not as good as, like, To Live and Die in L.A. or something extraordinary, you know?
It's funny. I just popped that on my queue. I just popped Live and Die in L.A. on my queue. I was like, I got to watch this. I've never seen it before.
It was awesome, right?
I haven't seen it yet. I got to watch it.
Okay. I'm not giving you...
Don't spoil it.
not a spoiler, but the car chase was extraordinary.
Was
right?
it?
Just like the gunfight in Heat was extraordinary, right? And it's like, if you're going to have it, let's see it, man. Let's see it new. Let's see it. And it reminds me, too, back to the theme of what we were talking. We had talked to, at one point in time, before J.J. Abrams was J.J. Abrams, he wanted to make an Oddworld movie. That's what they wanted to do that before Felicity.
Oh, wow.
And that's how we got to know.
Call him up again. Let's get this going.
I know. Well,
I'd watch that movie.
Unfortunately, you know, we stayed friends with Brian Burke and those guys. But what they used to say was they'd say, how do we go back to the way we made things when we were in college? How do we go back to thinking simply about productions? How do we spend less so we can do more of the stories we want, the characters we want, you know? And I think that's the ratio for creatives. Because the bigger the budget gets, the harder that becomes. And even if you're, how's Ready Player One early indications doing?
Not well.
Very mixed, right? Yeah. And that's Spielberg, so you can still get it wrong, right?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Cool, Greg, what is this you just brought up? What's going on here? Is this coming from the chat?
Yeah, Mr. Yasman's pretty excited about this.
All right, let's get this out. This comes from the chat. Mr. Yasman 300, this is a tweet from Entertainment Weekly's Twitter. We're going live on Facebook with @ShazamMovieCast on Wednesday. Reply to this tweet with your questions, and they may be answered on air. Get more details on the upcoming film here. Click on that link. Let's see what that does. Let's see, this is Wednesday, March 21st, tomorrow. So we'll have some fun news tomorrow about hopefully the DC Shazam's cast.
Is that who's Shazam?
Scroll down, I'll read the story. After years, this comes from Entertainment Weekly, after years in development, DC Shazam movie officially has a release date. The film starring Zach Levi, Chuck, as Captain Marvel, is going to be released on April 5th. Okay, so it is Zach Levi. How do I not know anything? This is the problem with DC, is I just don't know anything about their movies. I've lost interest. The film has also reportedly cast Mark Strong from The Kingsman and also Green Lantern as its yet unidentified villain, and David F. Sandberg lights out as director. Cool. I guess. We'll see.
He's not telling us much, right?
No, they haven't really released too many details
what else
about
was he
this.
In?
Zach Levi was in a show called Chuck for a very long time on TV, and he does...
I haven't had TV in a very long time.
If you go to Comic-Con, he does a lot of nerd stuff. He's a big fat nerd,
yeah,
which is great, metaphorically speaking. Nice. He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
He's tall, great hair. I hate him.
Yeah, me too.
Interesting.
Dark hair.
Interesting. We'll see about well. Tune back in tomorrow. We'll have all the expert analysis on Shazam for you guys. Let's bring up this... this is not much of a news story, but I'll read the headline anyway. Go ahead. This is from Deadline. The Weinstein Company is filing for bankruptcy tonight in Delaware. And there are a ton of people who are bidding to... They're going to basically just pick this company apart for all of its properties and let it die. And I think that's probably... It's probably for the best.
How do you save the brand, right?
You're not going to save the brand.
You can't.
The idea of the Weinstein company is dead forever.
It's dead forever.
If you have anything that has Weinstein on it, it is not a movie that's going to ship.
And it should have happened a long time ago, right?
Probably, given some of the story. The allegations against Harvey Weinstein are telling a tale that is not entirely pretty. It's sad because the Weinstein company has been one of the biggest advocates and proponents of independent cinema. They've made some really, really great films. They've also made some bad films.
They were also accused of fixing the Academy Awards with those extraordinary swag bags of $60,000 values that won them. What was the movie that they got? Princess Diaries? No.
No, not Princess Diaries. That'd be amazing.
But it was something. What was it? It was like that love story that was a comedy.
Oh, are you talking about Shakespeare in Love?
Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Did that deserve Best Picture?
No, it sure didn't.
No,
and I'll tell you why. Because
if you had Rolexes in your swag bag, right,
so that's why I want to go to the Academy Awards.
He caught a lot of trouble for that because basically through swag and through PR, they were manipulating the results of the Academy Awards.
This is the thing that a lot of people don't understand, is everyone thinks that award ceremonies like the Academy Awards are fair game. They are not. They are political. Mm-hmm. People, I read a lot of really fucking nerdy magazines, including American Cinematographer, which is a magazine that just talks about cinematography from the cinematographer's perspective.
Read?
I love it.
Nice.
I love my subscription ran out, and I was like, I felt weird. I had to go to a bookstore to get the newest one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the cover story was Star Wars: The Last Jedi, which I have zero interest in reading about.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about that is, like everything else, they do the big cover stories. You can then read about the up and comers in cinema. They talk a lot about the technology, the new cameras available, all those things.
I used to get
nerd out about that. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
it's so good.
I haven't gotten it in a while.
But Jesus, I totally lost track of what I was talking about. What was I talking about? It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. What I was going to say is every award season, you start seeing it, right? You start seeing you turn a page for your consideration, three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri for Academy Awards. They campaign for these things. Mm-hmm. If they think the movie is going to be good, they carve out a specific amount of budget so that they can go campaign with various people. Famously, you hear stories of people like Halle Berry when she was first coming up from Monsters Ball being toured around but being toured around all the old school Hollywood elite so that they could vote for her even though they hadn't seen the movie. And so there's a lot more politics that are behind the scenes with these things. All I'm saying is now I'm going to start my Oscars campaign right now. I'm going to make yet.
And you know what's messed up about, just real quick on Weinstein, is there's a lot more of these in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But the Hollywood hypocrites and hoes, which is I consider male and female equally accusable on that level. They're not. Weinstein's the one that's safe to come out and dog now. But all the guys that they know that are still doing this crap, they're not coming out. So it's basically an industry of, well, when it's safe, we don't want to rush our brand. We don't want to tarnish our brand by possibly not being safe and making the accusations against the predators that we know are running this town.
And it's unfortunate because it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier, which is that you have to have the support of so many different gatekeepers to make a big product like that, that you don't want to piss off the wrong person.
That's right.
How do I know if I accuse person A of something that person B is not going to hold that against me later down the road?
Exactly.
It's a very difficult situation.
Exactly.
That's why I run a small internet company out of a two-bedroom apartment in San Francisco, because I don't have that overhead, and I don't have to worry about pissing people off when I render a criticism against them that is completely unfounded and unintelligible. That's what we do. Next news story. Actually, we're doing good on time.
All right.
I got two more news stories. I want to get to the last news story for you because I think you'll be fascinated by it. This is a quick, fun one. Wes Anderson to make theatrical debut in China with Isle of Dogs. I don't know if you've seen the trailer for Isle of Dogs. It looks amazing.
Now, I like the picture. I like the dog. I like themes with dogs.
It is it is a story. Wes Anderson, of course, if you're not familiar with him, has directed movies like Life Aquatic. He did Moonrise Kingdom. Mm-hmm. He made Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is in that stop motion style. Mm-hmm. He's going back to stop motion with
this. Is this stop motion?
Yes, Isle of Dogs. It is about an island in Japan that is like a trash island that a bunch of dogs live on, and a boy loses his dog, and they think that they've shipped it out to this island.
Is this is there an island of trash?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. But it looks amazing, and of course it utilizes the voice talents of all of the people he works with, including Ed Norton, Bill Murray.
Oh, nice.
All these great people. Nice. It looks great. So this is the first time China is going to get to see this, which is great.
Wow.
If you didn't know, obviously the doors to China have been open as of the past 5 years, for 10 years, actually.
So what, they're just trying to avoid piracy, right?
I think the powers that be in China are very picky about what gets released there.
So it must have been financed in China.
It is not financed in China, but they are partnering with. Yeah, we can scroll down. I can read the story. They're partnering with a big Chinese studio to release it, and so that's kind of been the theme for the last 10 years. Is that a lot of money is coming out of China, but it has to benefit China, rightfully so. Of course, if you're investing in something, you want a return on your investment. Yeah. Wes Anderson's much anticipated stop motion animation Isle of Dogs is heading to China. The news was confirmed by The Hollywood Reporter at Hong Kong's Film Art by Chinese film company Joy Pictures, very huge by the way, which has partnered with Fox as the official local marketing partner on the title. Growing international mini studio Global Road Entertainment is linked up with Joy Pictures on the release and will support the film with its own local marketing resources. A spokesperson in 20th Century Fox's Beijing office declined to comment. Global Road couldn't immediately be reached. Basically, they're like, we don't care. We're releasing this thing in China. We're going to do it our way. We're going to make a lot of money off of it.
With voice by Yoko Ono?
Starring much of Anderson's unusual ensemble, Bill Murray, Tilda Swinton, Ed Norton, Jeff Goldblum. First off, those four names. Come on, son. Then you got Bryan Cranston, Scarlett Johansson, Greta Gerwig, who I love, Frances McDormand, who I also love, and others, including Yoko Ono. Isle of Dogs is set in a dystopian future, Japan, where dogs have been quarantined to an island made of trash because of an outbreak of, quote, canine flu. Not much of a story here, just
canine
cool that...
Canine flu.
Cool that Wes Anderson's movies are going to be more widespread. Obviously, if you can get a product like a movie like Isle of Dogs launched in China, you're going to make a lot more money and a lot bigger return off of that, thus allowing you to make another stop-motion film, which, by the way, are not cheap to make. Not cheap to make. All right, let's skip this next news story because I want to talk to Lauren about this one. Yeah, this is what I want. This comes from The Verge. Saw this morning, and I thought, I've got Lauren Lanning on my show. This is the perfect story for him. I'm going to read the headline, a little bit of the story, and let him talk. Uber likely, quote, not at fault in deadly self-driving car crash, police chief says. This story reads, Uber was likely not at fault in the deadly crash of its self-driving vehicle in Arizona on Sunday evening. Tempe Police Chief Sylvia Moir told San Francisco Chronicle in a startling interview the following day. Her comments have caused a stir in this closely watched investigation, which is being characterized as the first human killed by an autonomous vehicle. Quote, I suspect preliminarily, it appears that the Uber would likely not be at fault in this accident, Moore told the Chronicle, adding, quote, I won't rule out the potential to file charges against the backup driver in the Uber vehicle. The crash occurred near Mill Avenue and Curry Road late on Sunday in Tempe, Arizona. The Uber vehicle was headed northbound when a woman identified as 49-year-old Elaine Hertzberg was struck while pushing a bicycle across the street. Hertzberg was taken to the hospital where she later died from her injuries. The vehicle was traveling 38 miles per hour, though it is unclear whether that was above or below the speed limit. Police say that the speed limit was 35 miles an hour, but a Google Street View shot of the roadway taken last July shows a speed limit of 45 miles along the stretch of road. The driver, 44-year-old Rafael Vasquez, has given a statement to police. Police have viewed, I'll read the whole story before we jump down the throat. Police have viewed footage from two of the vehicle's cameras, one facing toward the street, the other inside the car facing the driver. Based on the footage, Moore says that the driver had little time to react. The driver said it was like a flash. The person walked out in front of them, she said. His first alert to the collision was the sound of the collision, she added. It's very clear it would have been difficult to avoid the collision in any kind of a mode, autonomous or human driving, based on how she came from the shadows right into the roadway.
So, first of all, it's tragic, right? Someone died.
Of course.
I made a comment that not that long ago about, you know, killed him, killed us, we killed ourselves to get it.
Sure.
But someone had died, mm-hmm. which made it completely inappropriate, right? So to be comedic around this, first I wanted to say, that's tragic. Someone died.
Of course.
We shouldn't be making fun.
Of course.
Right?
That person
then
has
my
a family.
Conspiratorial mind looks at the trend. And here's what I think is happening. Pretty soon, right now, we say, if you don't believe in getting... vaccinations, you're an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
Right. Or if you don't believe that you don't want vaccinations with heavy metals in them, you're still an anti-vaxxer, mm-hmm. right? I hope you're like, how about one without mercury in it, you know?
Right.
And then, but you're still an anti-vaxxer, right? If you have a difference of opinion of what's happening on global warming, automatically you're a climate denier, right? Climate science denier, right? Even though some of the most brilliant scientists on the world today, including Freeman Dyson, are like, the science is not accurate, mm-hmm. right? So that doesn't matter, because if you have any argument around a certain topic, pretty soon the argument is going to be, you're a wannabe reckless driver because you still want to control your own car. Mm. This is coming because there's so much money to be made on self-driving
the PR is going to spin.
The PR
to
is going
shame
to spin
people from
it's
having
going to
any
shame
sort of
people from driving, right? And yeah. then I think it's really diabolical, right? Because we're living on a planet that arguably, Bill Gates is telling us, is completely overpopulated and needs to be population reduction, right? Mm-hmm. And there's lots of people who feel this way. So it's like the Kingsman, right? What do? You give everyone free cell phones, and right. then you boom, and then you get them all
so
to
you
kill
think,
each other.
So you foresee a future where 10 years from now, everyone's not driving their own car, and then boom, we all just fucking crash into
and
each
then
other.
You have like 60% depopulation overnight.
Take out 3 to 4 billion people.
And no one's really accountable because it was just a software glitch.
I'm going to tell you this right now. Yeah. This is why I drive a 12-year-old Honda Accord.
Mine's
it doesn't
20.
Even have a USB port in it, and I love it, and it doesn't even have 100,000 miles on it. I'm taking care of that baby like it's my salvation.
I still drive livelihood. A 20-year-old truck.
You got to do it, everyone.
Here, yeah, I don't like that tech. Man.
There was that story a while back, maybe 10 years ago, where Wall Street Journal, New York Times reporter's car, the brakes malfunctioned.
It's arguable that it was taken over.
It's arguable it was taken over, right?
He was Rolling Stone.
It's,
right?
It was Rolling Stone, that's what it is.
He just said, watch my life because I'm breaking a story on the FBI, CIA, and my life is being.
Right.
I'm afraid for my life.
Comes out that he was, they say he was on drugs or whatever it was, and just wasn't piloting the vehicle.
Yeah.
But he had a car that was fully automated and could absolutely be hacked into. This is what terrifies me. People get super, super excited about Tesla, right? You have this information that comes out where, like, hey, people are complaining that the Tesla is scraping the bottom of the street as they're pulling out of their driveway. So what does Elon Musk do? Okay, pushes an update. The air shocks go up a little bit.
It's amazing, right?
You don't have that problem anymore. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. But the question becomes, how much of that are we willing to accept versus what is the risk of someone being able to literally hack into everything we do and control our lives?
Well, there's one rule to technology,
which is it always fails.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So the more we get into automation, then the failures, now maybe in this case, a live human couldn't have avoided it. And that's what the assessment is, right? In this case.
This seems to be the fact that no matter, this is just an unfortunate
accident. And that could very well be.
She right? Maybe potentially the person, the victim was not paying attention.
And that could very well be. But the more that we become relying on things like our cell phone.
Right.
Like for instance, right? One day, the reason I don't use Android anymore is because one time I was heading to LA with a whole series of business meetings, right? Yeah. All the information was in my phone, in my calendar and stuff like that. I accidentally hit an update on the OS. It wiped out all the information and changed my language. So now
what
all
did
the
it change
addresses, it changes like French or something I didn't understand, you know? And I was like, what is going on? Yeah. All the numbers, all the addresses, all the appointments were gone, wiped out of the calendar. It was a bug in their software. Oh, we're sorry, it was a bug. It screwed, you know, gave me a heart attack, right? And so, like, I don't like cars to have anything automated like that, but Elon Musk, in my opinion, is one of the only heroes of Silicon Valley today.
I agree.
Meaning, I think he's amazing, right?
He's truly, a fucking badass
truly
cowboy
badass.
Is what he is.
And I believe he's thinking about these things, right? When he mentions the threat of AI, he's for real, right? Like, read the Daniel Suarez novels, right?
Okay.
Freedom and Demon, like, that series. Mm-hmm. Read those, because that was a Silicon Valley defense tech writer who had signed so many NDAs he could no longer report on with all the tech companies about what was going on in the military-industrial complex. He could no longer report on it because it was all secret. Mm. But he had NDAs, he saw it, so he started writing novels about
it. So there's a fictional novels about it?
Unbelievable, man. I mean, I'm talking Michael Crichton meets George Orwell right now, for real.
Okay.
You know, Sherry read it and was upset for 2 weeks, right? Like, really, really, really disturbing. And when you look at, like, Google owning Boston Dynamics, Eric Schmidt and his shenanigans, what does that mean? What is an army of bots like? Read Swarm, which is also a Daniel Suarez about swarming AI stuff. We saw recently in Syria, Russian troops were attacked by unknown swarms of drones. Jeez. But who originated them? Who sent them? You know, these are unaccountability, right? It's like Minority Report, like just spiders are walking in, scanning your eyeballs, and
fucking
you just
terrifying.
Need to do it. Yeah. So this, I don't trust automation because I've been making software for 30 years, right?
Right.
And I understand nothing's that perfect.
Yeah, you've seen it go.
It's going to fail. It's going to fail. And if you want to really take the essence of terrorism is sort of immobilizing the machine, right? Is you turn the technology against itself. You didn't have a plane hijacking or a train hijacking before you had planes and trains, right? But what it did is before that period of time, you couldn't get a thousand people on one thing together to sabotage it. You couldn't get 500 people to just go down in one crash because the vehicle didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So what happens with every form of technology is then it's hacked. And it's taken over at some point. So we see the biggest corporations in the world are getting hacked and losing our financial data all the time. We don't even know what the blowback is. You and I don't know.
You don't know if like 3 or 4 years.
Stolen by, you know, Russian mafia hackers or whatever.
Yeah.
Or secret intelligence agencies. They're going to use it as a blowback if things of their crimes get exposed. We don't know, right? What we do know is we can't trust any of it when enormous money is involved and enormous entities are involved.
Yeah, I just read a story about Apple, saying that their valuation now is like in the trillions, I want to say, or something like that. So like, God, I forget what it was, but they're worth so much money that
they have the world's largest secret hedge fund.
They're insane. Yeah. They've got so much money and so much power and so much influence.
And then what are they doing? They're making all of us afraid to update our phone because we don't want to go spend $1,000 for a new one, right? Because we know that they're fixing the old one. Now they're going to do that with your automated car. And we go, oh, you know, the way it's working.
Battery's not working so much anymore. You're going to have to get a new car. Like, why can't I just change the battery?
Slip it in the code. They'll just be pulling another VW. And who else was doing it? Mercedes and all the German car companies.
It's interesting because that is the strategy, right? The strategy is, let's just keep pushing until someone pushes back. We go, oops, sorry, mea culpa, my bad.
Exactly.
Let's, everyone cool? Okay, we're gonna keep pushing forward. And the fact of the matter is, we all willingly adopt this technology because it does make our day-to-day lives better, but none of us wanna think about what the long-term effects of this all is. It might be great. Like, you know, in certain instances, we get Elon Musk shooting his Tesla over to Mars. That's fucking awesome.
How cool
is
that?
And if my money can go toward that, if God forbid we ever get the opportunity to, like, tell people where our tax money should go to, like, actually be able to log on and be like, I would like my tax money to go all toward education and, like, space exploration. Obviously, the economy would have collapsed because people would be like, you got to do other shit like roads. I'm like, I don't even fuck about roads.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to see a guy who just really... It's like, I don't give a fuck. You want to just do this. Cool.
It's
like,
who the fuck?
What
so
kind
great.
Of like crazy bastard goes, I want to privatize space travel? and I'm going to do it. Like, I think about shit like that all the time.
And revolutionize highway making by creating tunnels. You see the boring company now?
Yeah.
You know, and the batteries and the solar and the tiles and all this stuff. I was fortunate. Benny Terry, a partner in Oddworld that I work with, executive producer on and stuff, he's a Tesla guy. And he took us down, so I got a tour of the plant a couple weeks ago down, you know, down in Silicon Valley. And
that's cool.
When you see that, so there's a couple of things. There's so many. This is the biggest robot for this. This is the biggest weight press in the world, a million-pound press, boom, boom, right? And the whole, when they were testing the press and setting up that factory, the geological monitoring, you know, whatever it's called, National Geological, they were like, why are these earthquakes happening? Right? That's like, we're talking that magnitude. We're talking robots that grab batteries that weigh 1,200, 1,500 pounds and just go, boom, to within like, you know, microns of accuracy, like you are watching the future, right? But I'll tell you, one of the things I love about him and what he's doing is that when you go through that plant, the technological capability is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many firsts that are happening there, right? But then you look at the workers, and it's still mostly blue collar, right? Like, you're seeing something that we've seen deteriorate in the country. Mm-hmm. And that's where I look at Musk, and I go, he's building it in California. Look at how many people. SpaceX, the battery factory, the car manufacturing plant, the Boring Company, this is all using American blue collar. Like, my grandfather earned the watch from the railroad, right?
Yeah.
My father, my stepfather was a trucker. My dad was a Navy guy who started building electronics, you know, worked on the original ColecoVision, right? Like, these were like American craftsmen or really, at times, blue collar necessity labor. And to go through and you're looking at the most high-tech plant in the world, but you're seeing people of all different shapes and sizes, but it's largely like, And I mean that in a complimentary way. Like, you're seeing a workforce, and everyone, no matter who they are, no matter what color they are, no matter what age they are, they got something on it says that Tesla. And you know that, and you can feel their pride, right? And you know when that guy shows up, they're like, that's the guy we're working for. Now, how often is that, right? I'll tell you this, people are not walking in and going, Tim Cook, that's the guy we're working for, right? I wish the guy would use his damn products before he releases the crap half the time. Like it's like, are you kidding me? You know, and if you get into a beast that big, like, come on, how do you screw it up when you got that much money, right?
I think for one, I know that when Cool Greg comes to work, he's not thinking that way about me, unfortunately. But Cool Greg, it's my life's goal to make you walk into work one day and be like, I'm proud to work with this human being over here. Yeah. This guy's an inspiration.
I'm not sure anyone's saying about that with me.
I think people love you. I would love to. I would work for you in a heartbeat. Okay, if you have any job openings, what's going on?
We got a shipment from Ireland.
Okay.
I don't know if it was from Amy Gills or not, but it's some Irish chocolates. And guess who brought it up? Guess who brought up the fucking package?
Danny O'Dwyer. You're kidding me.
Are you
can't make
me?
This shit up. Sometimes truth stranger than fiction, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm kind of awesome. Sorry.
Hey, what's up?
But Amy, if this is you or whoever it was, let us know. Because there was no message inside. There's just like the ship to and the item.
It has to be Amy. We only have one fan in Ireland. It's Amy.
That's tea? What is that? A gift from Ireland, butlers. I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe it's tea. It's probably a candy.
Oh, no. Milk chocolate.
That's milk chocolate.
Milk chocolate truffles.
I just got excited that maybe it was some cool Irish tea that I never heard of.
You guys want any? You want me to leave it here?
I'm okay for now.
I'm okay for now.
But he'll be off in a second. Yeah. We have one quick tip before we get into the next half of the show. Panzer G2 has given us a tip. Said, Lauren, playing through New and Tasty over the summer. What a great remake. The control scheme on the original really held me back, but New and Tasty made me feel 10 years old again. Thanks for everything.
If we can make people feel 10 years old, I want some.
Man, I will say,
feel 10 years older.
I will say this right now, that one of the things that I think about all the time is I've lost that child mentality, that sort of child way of looking at the world, and I'm so sad about that. Every day that I get older is one step more away from that. And if you're fortunate enough to keep some of that childlike wonderment in you as you get older, you're going to be so much better off for it.
And you have to
never stop playing video games, never stop seeing nerd movies.
And you have to remain a bit of a clown, right?
You can't
like, even in the most serious circumstances, you have to be able to laugh. You have to, you know, we were going to GDC, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure. We're showing certain people certain things, and some of the team is like, I'm like, how you doing? And we're working incredible, right? And they're going, I'm really worried. I was like, look, man, we're okay, right? But if you're worried, you're going to get drained more.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm telling you, we're okay. Like, even if you don't pull off what you think you got to pull off for this, you pulled off enough, we're going to be okay. And it's amazing what you can do with different levels of stress if you can stay happy doing it, you know? And
if I had regrets about my career, it's like at times I take it too seriously. And man, nothing ages you faster and nothing makes you more depressed.
It's understandable though. You know, hindsight's 20/20. I've been there too. I've been to the point, even just with doing the stuff that we do, where I've gotten so stressed out, I've become a person that I don't like necessarily.
Right.
And
right.
I look back on that person, I think to myself, I would like to go back and sit that person down and be like, go to sleep. Get a good meal.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I love what we do here. And you understand, you're in that percentage of people who have the consequences, the peaks and valleys for you are a lot wider spread than everyone else out there, right? People working at a job where if you fuck up, you might get fired, but really what's gonna, like for the most part, what are the ramifications of a day-to-day fuck up? Whereas we, if I do something crazy, if I go out there and if I say a crazy racial slur right now, I mean it. I say a lot of jokes about, like, I say a lot of crazy stuff, but if I were to mean a joke like that, it could potentially have such harmful consequences to what we're doing here that I might not be able to recover. Mm-hmm. And so there is, when you run your own business, that is the stress that you take, but you also get the rewards of everything. You also get the, you know, the accolades, and you get to feel like you've actually done something.
Yeah.
And you get to form and shape the product along your vision, right?
And to be a much more visible target, you know.
That's what you take. With but with all those you know, virtues, you have to take a little bit of the, you know, a little bit of the heat, and that's what happens.
Yeah.
But
it's like if we could only. When I look back, I look at a lot of the business relationships, especially with employees at times. You know, maybe someone's not performing how you want, or maybe they're not aligned to what you thought they should be or what they committed to, or whatever. Maybe it's your own disillusioned expectations. But so many times I've stood back and go, wow, that relationship kind of got trashed. Mm-hmm. But I like that person. Mm-hmm. But the work circumstance, this capitalistic environment where, you know, only the strong are going to survive, you know, it, as entrepreneurs. I do resent the system of winner take all. I do resent that we're in far more than, which is what I liked about the indie process, was you could do 2x and keep on building games.
Right,
whereas
right.
if you did that with a publisher, you're out.
Right.
Right. And I've looked at and had relationships with people that I thought were really good people that really got tainted because of the business, you know? And that aspect, I'm like, it's really sad because that is the person I would like to have at the barbecue, you know? That is the person if we were just sitting down and it wasn't money and time and schedule between us, that we still would have been, you know, great friends. And
I've worked with a lot of, sorry, continue.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've worked with a lot of people who I think are very talented, but sometimes they just, maybe but one or both sides don't realize that relationship has run its course.
Yeah.
And I've often seen that people who, you know, have to leave a company for whatever reason tend to be happier because usually whatever led them to wanting to part with the company was a long time coming and no one realized it.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I've seen people who have been devastated obviously by it as well, but I've seen people who have left, like when I used to work at IGN, people would leave and go, you know what, I should have left a while back.
Right.
I was not the right person for this role, myself included, by the way, because I stayed there for probably 2 years longer than I
probably should have. And it happens more and more as the world around us gets more expensive, right? Like, we can't afford to take risks.
Your margins are narrowing, so you gotta make sure.
Go to Silicon Valley, startup, you make a lot of money. There's millions of train wrecks where people mortgage their house just hoping that second round of funding would come through. Wrecked families, wrecked, you know, all the kinds of possibilities. And now, you know, they can't live here.
Yeah, well, we only ever usually hear about the success stories.
Exactly.
Right?
But
you don't
for
hear
every
about
success
the
story
thousand
here,
that didn't work.
There's 10,000 that didn't work. Right? Yeah, we're not hearing that tragedy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, PS I Love This Best Friend, XOXO is your opportunity to shout someone out in the community that you think is doing a great job of being a human being. Go to kindoffunny.com/bestfriend, fill out the form just like Amy Gills did. Amy Gills, hopefully you sent us that package. If not, whoever did send us that package, we appreciate you. She did. Great. Thank you for that. Amy is shouting out Wes Bray. She says, a small shout out to Wes for helping me with a few bits over the past while, including allowing me to have a parcel delivered to the house and then sending it on as Amazon wouldn't deliver it to Ireland. Really appreciate the help, Wes. Thank you. That's awesome. That's what we like to see there. All right, it's giveaway time, ladies and gentlemen. Each and every day here on the Kinda Funny Morning Show, we give away a game. There's 4 ways to win. 1, be in the Twitch chat. 2, be a Twitch subscriber. This is your daily reminder that you have Amazon Prime. Jeff Bezos is the richest human being ever to live. He wants to give us a free $5 via you. So if you want to do that for us, take a little bit of his billions away, give it to us. If not, give it to someone in the community you feel is doing a great job of streaming. Andy was streaming last night. You can give it to him. I gave mine to JJ Amrod. It's a cool thing that Amazon's doing. This is your reminder. Ways 3 and 4, go to patreon.com/kindoffunny or patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Support us at the $2 above level, and that gets you an entry to win. Yeah, I've said that a couple times. Today's giveaway is brought to you by MeUndies. Before we get to the winner, you want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? Sure, yeah. Why not? But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, made from a sustainable sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times more softer than cotton. For fellas, MeUndies diamond-shaped pouch cradles your jewels and gives your stuff the support it needs without feeling it too tight. Tim can attest this. I don't wear MeUndies because they will not give me free pairs. They keep shipping them to me. Tim keeps stealing them and putting them on himself. He likes them very much. Apparently we're the same size. What was the terminology they used here?
The Charmin of underwear.
Our pouch is the same size. Yeah, exactly. But right now they're running a great deal for anyone that wants to try it out. 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guarantee you will love your undies or your money back. Let's see. This is a no-brainer. You get 20% off. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed, get the best, softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. This is a limited time offer, so what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed Tim's life. It'll change. It's time to let MeUndies change yours. Go to MeUndies.com/morning right now. You didn't hear that enough? I've said it 15 times. There you go. Today's winner of the giveaway wins Pop-Up Pilgrims on PSVR. Congratulations to Dominic Higa from Kinda Funny Patreon. You have won a PSVR game. Hopefully you have PSVR. If you are not one of the fortunate few who do, give that to someone who does in the community. There you go. All right. We're a little long on the show today, but I did want to give the chat audience some opportunity to talk to you and to talk to me a little bit. Yeah. So we'll go into what we call the 3 and 3, nice. Where we will talk to you. We'll take a few questions from the non-subscribers, or the norms, as I call them, and then we will talk to the chosen few, the subs, give them a little extra time with us right now.
Great.
If you're asking to yourself, am I creating a caste system within our chat, I am, and I'm doing that purposely, because I like to pit people against each other for my own financial gain.
You should be in politics.
I'm thinking about it. With the amount of shit that I've said on camera, there's no way. Or maybe I could be president.
No, you're the
politician. Maybe I am the truthful politician. Maybe I'm the first politician on the planet that will admit he's horribly addicted to porn. How about that? Cue up your questions, comments, guys. Let's ask some good questions here.
Fortunately, it's a cheaper habit today.
Porn?
Yeah.
It's very cheap.
Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you one thing.
What it costs?
Oh, I do. It costs more than just money. It costs your humility. You had to go and actually buy a porn movie and admit to everyone in whatever store you were at that you were going to masturbate later that night.
and they knew exactly what category.
Oh, God, it was the worst. They'd look at it and be like, wow.
I mean, not that I know, I've just heard.
I mean, I'm married. I don't think about anything other than my wife ever. That's not true. Everyone who follows me knows that. Nick, giving the people they want, where's SAO Fatal Bullet Review? Oh, I'm still working on that. I got to work on that. Let's see. Mr. Yasmin 300 asks, has Lauren seen the John Wick films? Are you familiar with these?
Yeah. You know, typically I'm not into gratuitous violence, but there's something kind of remarkable about the John Wick films. Yeah, in the last one where they did the, what do they call it when everyone, you know, the street all of a sudden changes the NARG type of thing.
Or he just like goes like this and everyone stops.
Yeah, that was so freaky.
Yeah,
I was like,
it was dope.
I wasn't really familiar with the John Wick comic book, even though I go to the comic book shop every week. Like I never got into it. And then
I didn't even know it was a comic book.
I didn't really realize it was like a Marvel universe of assassins, really.
I didn't know that.
But that's what it felt like. And that's what I really got in the second one. So it was so over the top. Like Sherry hated it, but she loved Bloodpool.
Interesting.
And because all the Hollywood inside jokes.
Right.
You know, and which I don't have a clue. But when John Wick, I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy. But you know, here's the thing. When I look at like today with Hollywood and stuff, and this just goes to it. It's like all the stars are out there complaining about guns, blah, blah, blah. And every one of them's going to show up in their next movie on a poster promoting guns, right? The irony is staggering. How many film studios are committing to not showing guns in the next year in their pictures?
No.
It's
none.
Not going to happen. It's
Zero.
Not going to happen, right?
I often talk about this too. I joke around a lot because we, as a society in America, it's different in other countries, but in America, we love guns, but we hate sex. We do not want to show sex. You're not allowed to show.
Violence is fine.
Showing people dying is fine, but showing people making life is not. Oh, is not cool. It's not kosher, right? You'll see. There's no like full frontal nudity is a no-no.
Yeah.
You can't show a male penis. How fucking dare you? Even though 50% of the people on the planet have one.
Yeah.
How dare you? I could look at my own right now.
Yeah.
But I'm not allowed to see that mirrored on screen. Yeah. However, I can see someone disemboweled by a fucking shotgun and be desensitized to that.
Their face ripped open.
Our priorities. I'm not saying our priorities are a little out of whack. I'm just saying it makes you think. how we glorify something that one thing that takes away life and are, and shame ourselves for the thing that gives life.
It's a bizarre thing.
It's a weird thing.
It really is.
But I do like it because it makes porn more special. let's see here. Someone had a good question. Oh, great question.
Okay.
Last time you were on our show. Okay. Last time I spoke with you, you had some choice words about the Switch.
Oh. Yeah.
Frog and Bullish 89 says, Lauren, what are your thoughts on the Switch now? Has its success swayed your opinion on it?
Of course.
Of course.
I mean, you can't argue with success, right? And you know, we're trying to work some stuff out to get there. And I think my argument of it was I was blown away by the policies in place on the Wii U, and I didn't see that those policies were gonna change, which meant if you're doing what we're doing, which is really pushing like PS4 Pro, Xbox One X, pushing that level of performance, I don't know that we're gonna get on the Switch. And if we do, it's certainly not gonna be a simultaneous release.
Sure.
And if the day and day release, right? And if the policies of Wii U continued into Switch, then there's no point doing a conversion for the platform unless you got a partner with a marketing budget. And what I found so sort of archaic about the previous policies around Wii U is that I didn't understand, if we have a good game, and our whole credibility is based on good games. And if you go on to the mobile stores, we're 4.5 stars across the thing. If you go on the Metacritic, we're 80 plus on everything we've built, right? And I mean, it could fluctuate the week to week, you know. But the point being is we rely on that because we don't have marketing money. And so Google will feature us, Android will feature us, Microsoft will feature us, Sony will feature us, Steam will feature us, God Games will feature us. Any other outlet will get featured because we're bringing something to the audience, like Netflix will highlight a new movie if it's a new movie for their users, right? But when you have a completely dry store and then you bring a content to it and they won't expose it, then you're dead on that platform, right? So that was the policy I was really opposed to, which I said gave me a little faith of Switch.
Has that policy changed in your
opinion? It looks like it's changed because the store is promoting stuff that has been released previously on other platforms, and you would think maybe they were only doing that because it wasn't doing so well, but it is doing well, so it looks like policies are changing, so I'd love to see nothing more. And as I said on the last show, who doesn't want to see Nintendo win?
I want to see him win.
Right? I want to see him win.
And I'm a Nintendo fanboy.
And
so
I was a bit discouraged
by
that. But hopefully that doesn't stand in the way.
I'm glad to see the opinions are shifting more toward the positive. That's fantastic. Oh my God, speaking of things that make me happy. Cool, Greg, bring this up real quick.
I want to see NSYNC would kill Backstreet Boys in a back alley.
Just period. Just end it there. NSYNC would kill Backstreet Boys. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Here's the deal. In basketball, maybe. In a real fist fight, I think Backstreet Boys would beat the shit out of NSYNC. And it pains me to say that. But we got Joey Fatone here. He's a heavy hitter. He looks like he's lifting. I don't know if Lance Bass and Chris Kirkpatrick are really gonna hold up their end of the bargain. Because Backstreet Boys had some big guns there. But we'll see.
But with baseball bats, I'm logging in to watch that.
Oh, fuck yeah.
The back alley.
Fuck yeah. How do I subscribe to that pay-per-view? I'll pay $60 for that.
Exactly.
Let's see. Lexi Gunner says, Nick, where do you rank Michael B. Jordan on the Rags to Abs podcast? You mean Rank My Abs podcast? I would say he ranks, I think I ranked him. I think he ranked at number 3 or 4. There you go. We do a lot of stupid shit here. Don't worry about it. Let's see. We're in sub-only mode. Oh, this is a good question. Yorks in Portland says, does Lauren have a game made from a studio outside of his own that he is looking forward to in 2018? Do you get a lot of opportunities these days to sit down and play games?
It's tough, man. Yeah, it's tough, you know? Thank God for YouTube and thank God for Twitch, because when someone says you got to play this game, A, I'm just as susceptible to the next guy to getting addicted, but I don't have the time to get addicted. So one of the few times I'm able to actually get my hands on controls is when I need to feel someone else's achievement in controls, right? Or I need to feel a pacing of something that's happening in the game. They're like, you need to feel this. The rest of the time, I'm watching walkthroughs. And then I'll watch with a female walkthrough, I'll watch a male walkthrough, I'll watch a younger walkthrough, and I'll watch an older person walkthrough on the same game. And that gives me like this whole different demographic than I could have gotten by playing it by myself, right? So YouTube allows me to see games faster without having to get sucked into my own frailty of being addicted by these things.
You're 100% not alone.
And literally, like, I get to work at 9 to 10. And this is, you know, a lot of the crew is in this, you know, here we are in the crunch.
Crunch
I get
time.
To work at 9 to 10 and I try to get home by midnight. That's every day.
Wow.
And that's how it goes.
So no. Maybe In a little bit, you'll have some time to sit, to carve out some time. You'll go for a couple rides, come back and
well, the thing is, you know, so you play games. Like I was saying, we depend on quality as a release, right? And there's only one way to get there when you're small and independent, which is you work harder.
Yep.
Do you work harder now than when you were at IGN?
Yeah, yeah. But to be fair, the last year I worked at IGN, I went to Starbucks most of the time. I kind of phoned that in. Sorry, Fran, I love you. Sorry, Per, I love you guys. We're a little long on the show, and I know you've got a lot of things to do, so thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's always
a pleasure.
Awesome.
We got to get you back on GOG so we can do a two-hour-long podcast with you, and we'll talk about, we'll bring this Uber story up again. We'll just go down the rabbit hole.
Let's do the dark future and see what it looks like.
It's going to be great. I'll probably be dead well before that. ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. If you have questions, you can follow Lauren at Lauren_Landing on Twitter. You can follow me at Nick_Scarpino. We are part of the much acclaimed underscore club.
Oh, and we launched the Kickstarter today.
Oh, shit. That's an important thing to say.
With Alex.
Indie by Design.
Indie by Design is a new book, The Oddworld Abe's Origins, that's doing.
Fantastic. Everybody go over and check out that Kickstarter. Do we have a link for that at all?
Oddworld.com, front page will take you to Kickstarter. If not, go to Kickstarter, search Oddworld. It'll be the first thing that comes up.
Boom. Go out, check that out, ladies and gentlemen. While you're doing that, I will get prepared. Well, I'll read subs, and then we'll get prepared for Kind of Funny Games Daily, starring Greg Miller and the return of Danny O'Dwyer, or as I like to call him, the return of the Mac. There he goes. I just threw that out there because it popped into my head. Makes no sense. Makes no sense for an Irishman. Guys, I love you. Lauren, have a great week. Cool, Greg.
Thank you.
Cut the feed.